Thursday, June 9th. You know why we're late? Because I'm impaling myself, because I'm trying to download some backdrop thing into a Zoom backdrop, and it hurts me. I can't even tell you to my frickin' core. But I am Guy Adami. I'm joined, as always, by Dan Nathan. In just a few minutes, Liz Young from SoFi. E to the Y from the so to the fi, as it would have it. Today's episode brought to you by FactSet. Financial data and analytics powered by tomorrow, the aforementioned SoFi. Dan, get your money right all in one app, and we are powered by Open Exchange. I'm sorry about this, Dan. I know you're exercised at me. I don't mean to do this. I am not meant to live in this world of downloads and all these things and arrows and carrots and all that shit. Yes, I just said it. How are you?
You're fired up, man. And, you know, it is game five of your New York Rangers Eastern Conference Series. I think that's what's going on here, Guy. You have a little bit of angst, a little anxiety before tonight's game. But like you said yesterday on Market Call, if you had known during that Pittsburgh series you were going to have best of three home court to get in the Stanley Cup Finals, you would have taken it. All right, let's talk about this. Speaking about taking it, the ECB, Guy, is done with – I know that this was an experiment that brought you a lot of, I don't know what it brought you. It brought you something over the last, call it, 5 or so years. The ECB, which there was, what, trillions of dollars of negative yielding sovereign debt here. They're going to do away with that. There's going to be no more negative yields. They're going to start raising interest rates. What's your quick take here? And again, you know, our 10 years above 3% here. We're going to talk about the 210 spread here a little bit and what it means for equities. You know, again, this was well documented. People knew this was going to happen here. They're going to start raising rates after us. What's your take on what the ECB is
about time? I mean, as they say, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time today. And, you know, they're better late than never, and good for them. But negative yields, you know, I still don't think the market fully comprehends the negative impact that negative yields have on a variety of different things. And I think we're starting to see the back end of the ramifications now. What does it mean to the markets? Well, clearly today, nobody seems to care. In typical market fashion, you know, market's effectively unchanged here, and we'll see how it shakes out. But to your point about yields, when you have basically global debt to GDP probably approaching, I don't know, 125% or so, if not higher, if you really measure it correctly, I think yields going higher is a problem. Now, yields have to go higher for obvious reasons, not least of which inflation is running rampant. We'll obviously talk about that as well. But, you know, it just is what it is. And we're starting to now pay the piper for decades, yes, with a plural, with an S at the end, of excess.
Yeah. Well, we were just talking about the U.S. 10-year back above 3%. The 2-year is at 282, Guy, and it really looks like it wants to make a beeline for that. Kind of, I think it was 297 was the high in late 2018. So, you know, again, you and I have spent a lot of time on Market Call and Fast Money talking about what a higher rate environment means, even if we don't have runaway rate. Listen, a lot of smart people that I know in the business think that rates are going much, much higher. I just think that when we talk about, like, some of the data that we're starting to see, maybe the potential for the Fed's jawboning and some of the initial rate increases and now QT, that maybe rates aren't going as high as some of these people think, because we're seeing that the Fed jawboning actually have an effect on growth and on some of these negative inflationary sort of forces. Talk to me a little bit about the 210 spread though here, Guy, because you called for an inversion last year. We got it here, man. And it really feels like that the 2 year is going to go. Next week, we have this Fed meeting. We're going to get a 50 basis point rise if they remain hawkish. We're going to get another 50 in July. The CME Fed Funds Tracker is basically saying there's a greater than, I don't know, 85% chance of that in July. Talk to us about this spread in the 210s.
Well, obviously went negative for a brief period of time, then it blew out. I mean, it's an interesting choice of words, but I'll use them. I think to like 45 or so basis points, and it's been steadily coming in. And I think what's going to wind up happening, to your point, although a lot of people think yields are going higher in the back end, I think what's going to wind up happening is this softer economic data is going to make yields actually go lower in the back end. Unfortunately, inflation is still going to be a problem in the form of energy, which means 2 years probably going to continue to go higher. And I do think this thing is going to invert, and it probably inverts somewhere around, I don't know, 285, 290 or so as the 2 year continues to go higher. We'll see if that plays out. I don't think that's particularly bullish. And I can make an argument that 10-year yields go higher, it's a bad thing because inflation is out of control. And if 10-year starts coming in, it's a bad thing because effectively means economic growth is slowing and maybe the market's selling off. So we were in a scenario, we were in an environment where no matter what happened, it was bullish for equities. I think we're starting to flip that switch and find ourselves in an environment where no matter what happens in terms of yields, it's actually going to be bearish for equities.
Yeah, no, that's a great segue. We have that Fed meeting next week. You and I took a deeper look with Carter yesterday at the S&P 500. Here's my very simple chart here, Guy. We've been talking about this overhead resistance in that kind of 4,200 range in the SPX here. We have this little bit of a consolidation. I just want to go to a kind of year-to-date chart, and you look at the last 8 or 9 trading days, you see after we had that bounce off the lows in May, we've just been consolidating here. And you know what? On days where we close on the high at the high end of the range, it looks like a really good-looking flag, Guy. And then on days like today where it's at the low end of the range, you say to yourself, it feels like a really anemic bear market rally, and there's probably one tape bomb away from having us breaking to the downside and then on our way to retesting those May lows. Quick thoughts here, because really, I think we're going to have a move one way or another into the Fed meeting. And again, we always know sometimes that first move after the Fed announcement and after those headlines is often reversed, but usually it's a sort of knee-jerk reaction.
Bit of a head fake to your point, 100%. And what's the catalyst? You know, I do think the market probably sort of treads water until this CPI number. And honestly, I don't know what the market wants or what it's looking for, or quite frankly, what it needs to make the market go higher. I think a lot of people would submit, if we get a soft CPI number, if this thing has, let's say, a 7 handle or so on it, that might be enough to get the market going higher. I'm not certain that's the case. And quite frankly, the flip side, if this thing continues to be both persistent as pesky, as I've said for a number of weeks now, you know, is that going to make the market go lower? I really don't know. This is one of those situations where even if you told me what the number is going to be, I don't necessarily think I could sort of gauge what the market's going to do on the back of it. I will say this, though. I think if you listen to enough of these Fed geniuses speak, they're all clearly concerned about inflation run amok. And if they're doing their best to sort of, I happen to think, prep the market for what they need to do. And it's not just me. I mean, we've talked about it a number of times. People like Jamie Dimon seem to be concerned about that as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, Guy, you know, as we do every once in a while, I'm going to call a little bit of an audible here.
Oh, you're going to the line of scrimmage, sort of like Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, it's kind of a Utah
over the defense. And
it's kind of Omaha, Utah, something like that. I'm going to bring in EY from SoFi. That's what you call her. She is Liz Young. She is down at the Consensus Conference
Austin.
It's a digital assets count. Look at her. Look how happy she is to be in Austin, Texas.
Because I didn't have to make a Zoom background. I just have these beautiful hotel curtains. This was easy.
Can I tell you something? Before you go into this, Dan, I just want to say something. You know, they were trying, just so you folks know, this is what they call it, behind the curtain or fifth wall or some damn thing. I'm not sure. But before the show today, they said, you have to put up your green screen, and then we sent you a thumbnail, and you have to download it into Zoom. I'm like, are you effing kidding me? I mean, why don't you just ask me what the winning lottery number is going to be tonight? You have a better shot. And here's EY with her drapes behind her. By the way, she was on fire last night on the Twitter talking about frying eggs on sidewalks and all that kind of stuff.
It's anyway, hot here. Dan,
please continue.
It's hot. Well, listen, Liz, we wanted to bring you in here. We're going to hit a bunch of stuff. We're going to hit your note that just posted on the SoFi blog. We're also going to take a bunch of listener questions that you polled earlier in the week that you're hitting on your monthly podcast. It's going to come out. You're going to tell everybody where they can find that. But first things first, you heard us just talking about the rates, what the ECB is doing and what that might kind of mean for the Fed as we get into the meeting next week. And we talked about the S&P 500. Again, I think you would agree it's in a trading range. I saw you on Squawk and Friends yesterday morning with our main
you
man,
watched?
Joe Kay. Yeah, I saw it on Twitter, and you were talking about being defensive, and I thought it was a really good segment. But I wanted to hit a couple sectors in the market here and really kind of get your sense and obviously Guy's of what we're thinking they're saying about the broader market. I wanted to start with materials. Guy and I talked about materials last night on Fast Money here. Look at the XME, okay? This is the ETF that tracks the materials. The largest holdings are BTU, Arch, I don't even know. Oh, Steel Dynamics, Reliance Steel. Okay, so steel stocks, you get it, right? For the most most part. You saw that breakout after a really long consolidation. I mean, it was the reopening trade. It was, you know, the economy was getting better. It was all that sort of stuff here. Obviously, inflation was a big part of it. We pulled back. We checked back to that breakout level. We had a bit of a bounce here. To me, it really looks like it really wants to go back towards that 200-day moving average and that breakout level. And Guy, I'll just say this real quickly. If it does do that and it breaks, you get an overshoot to the downside. You're going to see 40 in that thing. So I'd love to get your technical take and obviously what you're thinking about metals, because you've been on this trade. You had the breakout call. What do you think now?
Well, it hasn't been trading particularly well. I think part of the reason is the soft economic data here in the United States. The other thing is I think that zero COVID policy in China took sort of some of the steam out of the sails here, as they say, steam out of the balloon for this trade. With that said, valuations are becoming very compelling for so many of these names. I mean, you throw U.S. Steel, for example, which has round tripped the entire move we've seen over the last 6 or 7 months, and valuations are reasonable. Yes, the underlying commodity prices have come down. Steel prices have absolutely come down. And maybe, again, that's on the back of softer economic data. And to a large extent, maybe these names are doing the Fed's job for them. I would submit the following, though. You know, China is going to reopen. I think you're going to see a reacceleration not only there, but probably here. And I think these stocks are sort of behind the curve. So I'm more inclined to be long these names here than short them.
Yeah. So, Liz, what would you do to extrapolate this if you were to see just like weakness in this sector? What does it make you think about the reopening trade? And how do you think about the S&P 500, which is really trying to find some form of bottom here, which is this kind of intersection between maybe inflation moderating, maybe the Fed being able to take their foot off the pedal at some point later this summer? I think that's something that you were tweeting about or talking about. And do you follow a sector like metals as some sort of input or an important input to your like broader macro thesis?
Absolutely. And Dan, you missed a show a few weeks ago where Guy and I gave ideas for the second half. I gave financials as an idea. Guy gave materials only because he wanted to use financials, but I already had grabbed it. So I'm on the same page here, though. But you think about how some of these sectors have acted. And I would put financials in this bucket, too, where they've traded down so much, the selling feels overdone, especially with what I do think is possible in the second half. Now, not in the first 30 days of the second half. And I think that's part of what I said on Squawk yesterday. It might not happen right away, but I think it happens starting in fall, late fall, where you have a little bit of a cyclical bounce. And the sectors like materials and like financials that have seen outsized outflows are the ones that'll come back when that happens.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, let's look at transports here. I know that Amanda loves this joke. That's why I'm going to use it again. I think Guy wrote the white paper with Charles Dow on the Dow theory. What was that, about 100 years ago when you guys were studying economics here?
D-O-W Dow, though, yeah, not... Yeah. Yeah, not the other kind of Dow.
Exactly. And so when you look at the transports here, and obviously they never confirmed the new highs in the S&P 500 earlier in the year, and that would have been a bearish signal, right, Guy Adami? Mm-hmm. That's what you guys came up with back in the day. This one feels really heavy. You look at some of the top holdings, Guy, in the IYT, Union Pacific, UPS, CSX, FedEx, Norfolk. These are all the companies that ship all the raw materials or finished goods or everything all the way around. It just doesn't feel particularly great. Curious your take here, Guy, and what it means, because we have not seen a divergence in the transports with the broader market.
No, and obviously it's some of the most economically sensitive names. And I guess it does to a certain extent make sense that these names have come off somewhat precipitously. But, you know, FedEx, a lot of problems with FedEx seems to be, in my opinion, FedEx specific, because UPS, which is effectively the same, well, I shouldn't say the same company, but you understand what I'm saying. They've seemed to navigate this a lot better. I think 10, 15 years ago, this would be far more bearish.
We might have lost him here. He might have frozen up here. Liz, give it to me here on what you're thinking on the transports. I think what he was saying is that just kind of the disconnect between, you know, how the economy has evolved, maybe this is less important than it used to be. So what's your take on the transports here? Because there's a lot of funky action in many of these names right now. And to me, it really reflects the uncertainty of the sort of where we are as far as the economy and the recovery right now.
You know what's interesting, though, is So we talked for a long time about how semiconductors had taken over the role of transports when we looked at cyclical indicators for the market, right? So the cyclical indicator of yesterday was transports, and now it's semiconductors. In this environment, I think transports might be another time when we want to look at that as an indicator, and especially if everything comes back from a cyclicality standpoint. And I want to be specific about what I mean by that. Right now, the market and a lot of investors are positioned as if we are super late in the cycle and we're just waiting for the recession to come. What if we find out that we're mid-cycle? If we find out that we're mid-cycle and not late cycle, that's where you get a cyclical bounce. And we might find that out later in summer, early fall, if inflation comes down and if we don't have, you know, some kind of catastrophic event or we go into a deep recession. So in that scenario, transports are okay to watch. But I think one of the other points that Guy was making is that not all companies are created equal in these environments, right? FedEx is going to be different than UPS. You're going to have that in a lot of different sectors where companies are going to react differently, regardless of the fact that macro news is out there and is a blanket statement. So you do have to be choosy about it. But I think transports might be interesting to watch.
Yeah, you make a really good point. And, you know, obviously we had a negative GDP print in Q1, right? And the official definition of a recession is two consecutive negative quarters. And I don't know if you saw the Atlanta Fed GDP Now survey. You know, right now for Q2, they're tracking below 1%. Now, again, I know that there's some of these forecasters are better than others, and people say that the Atlanta Fed doesn't always have it right. But let's just say we did have a slightly negative quarter in Q2. And let's just say, you know, in hindsight, it looked to be like a very, you know, shallow-ish, run-of-the-mill sort of recession. That might be a great setup, to your point, about a cyclical bounce later on in the summer, especially if we do see inflationary pressures moderate. You just mentioned semis here. Let's look at the SMH, the ETF that tracks, and we know the largest holdings there are Taiwan Semi, NVIDIA, ADI, Texas, Intel here. And, you know, this one is interesting. I backed this chart out a couple years. You see the downtrend that it's been in. It's down about, you know, 23% or 24% or so on the year. That's basically tracking in line with the NASDAQ, but it just had this bounce that didn't even get back to the downtrend that's been in place from earlier in the year. So how does this sector fit into that kind of cyclical sort of bounce potential? The one risk here, as far as semis are concerned, is that I think we're going to start to see, as we get towards the end of Q2, based on what Intel just had to say, that there was a lot of double ordering over the last 6 months or so, and we could see a lot of cancellations, we could see higher inventories, and we could see some pricing pressures here. So that's one of the reasons why I want to keep a very close eye on this sector, because most of the names in this group, other than NVIDIA, are fairly cheap on a valuation basis. So curious your thoughts on semis here.
I think with semis, unfortunately, I mean, I haven't been able to get bullish on semis this whole year because it just continues to seem like there's problem after problem after problem, right? The issue we had about a year ago, a little more than a year ago, was that we couldn't get enough semiconductors. We couldn't find them. Now we might have a problem where inventory is building up and we have too many in certain spots. I think that this sector too is guilty by association in the growth trade. It's a tech sector. It's going to be guilty by association as long as we're worried about rising rates and as long as the Fed continues to tighten at this aggressive level. So this is just not a space that I'm looking at, number one, as a market indicator broadly. And it's not a space, regardless of how cheap it's gotten, that I'm ready to put my money in.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And I mean, listen, there are value traps like Intel that are making, you know, new lows right here and trading 11 times, decent balance sheet, mis-execution, lost market share. There's a whole host of things going on there that you could say, well, maybe it's so bad, it's good. On the flip side, a company like NVIDIA, which is executing very well, it just suffers from a very fat valuation, right? And that thing is up about 18% from its lows just last month. An earnings report, which wasn't bad by any means. The guidance was a little soft, but the fact is, keep an eye on those lows from last month here, because that to me will kind of indicate how the semis go through the course of the summer. All right, one last space here, and this would be software. Look at this IGV, the ETF that tracks that. We know the largest holdings are Microsoft, Adobe, Salesforce. This one is really problematic. You see where this one topped out, you know, late last year. year, and all the way, it was, you know, just below 450. It just, you know, nearly got cut in half here. It bounced back to that breakdown level from May, but wasn't really able to kind of even retest that downtrend that's been in place. So this one, to me, again, some of the valuations aren't egregious. You know, Microsoft's still trading 27 times. Adobe's a little fat. Salesforce is a little fat. But a lot of these names have really corrected. Curious thought on software. I know that one of the theses here, or at least the bullish pillar, is that, okay, the recurring revenue nature should be, right? It should help out as you think about if we go into recession. But if a lot of the companies that license seats from these companies are doing layoffs, less seats, less revenue, more pressure on margins, thoughts here on software. And look, we got Guy Adami back. Guy, how are you, buddy?
Welcome back, Guy. We missed you.
I got to tell you something. I mean, I am on a hair trigger right
Not
now.
Not your day. Well, here, let's listen to Liz on software, and then we'd love to hear what you got to say on that one. All right.
Look, I just said I wasn't bullish on semis. I feel better about software for some of the reasons that you just presented, but this has to be a long-term trade for people. This is something that it's still going to have headwinds as we go through this part of the cycle. And as you mentioned, we're starting to see tech companies go through layoffs. They were the hardest hit in the first part of the market. I think that's going to continue. So yes, there's going to be pressure on margins. There's going to be a lot of cost cutting for some of these companies, but the software space in general is only growing. And I would go even further to say cloud software in particular. And I've said this before on the show, these are opportunities to buy themes on sale, right? So think about a theme that you think is going to persist for the next 2 to 5 years. If it's on sale right now, this is a good entry point.
Salesforce got down about 155. We actually talked about it on Market Call, I think, right before they reported earnings. Stock was trading 163. Dan, you had mentioned there was a options implied about a 10% move. And I remember saying, you know, it looked like the setup was pretty good into that. I thought it could trade sort of 180, 185, and we'd still be in this downtrend from November of 2021. And now here we are a little north of 190, and you can start to make a compelling argument that just on a technical basis, this thing's about to break out from a pretty significant, pretty steep downtrend line. So I'm sort of with EY on this one. Valuations are obviously more reasonable than they've been, and last quarter was pretty good. And if you've been waiting to get in a name like Salesforce for a long time, listen, the 155 entry point in retrospect was the place to be, but I actually think we might be breaking out to the upside here.
Fair enough. We know the levels here. We'll see it, right? And again, you know, I'm a little bit less optimistic than you guys. I know that we just had that Salesforce report last month. We just had that guide down by Microsoft they said on FX. I suspect that we're going to see some disappointing trends as some of these companies start to guide again in late July. All right, Liz, you had your note out on the SoFi blog here. You're talking about defensive flows in the markets. Give us the 411 because Guy, Guy's going to get into your kitschy sort of like titling of all this sort of thing here too. And he's all fired up for it.
Yeah, this note, I mean, I thought I peaked at the soap opera thing. This is a new peak. I've beat myself. So what I looked at this time was the flows. And this is stuff that this is not a surprise to anybody, but we just wanted to wrap some numbers around it and show how dramatic it's been. Because it's always a good question to ask, what have investors actually been doing, right? We talk about stuff all the time, theoretically, where has the money actually gone? And what we found was that people are moving very hard out of cyclicals into defensives, and that still is continuing. And every single month this year, there's been more outflows than inflows in all major risk asset classes. So what that meant to me is that there has to be cash on the sidelines, hence the title, Plenty of Room at the Hotel Cashifornia. And now we have to figure out, okay, there's cash there and it's okay to be there. And I've been saying that for a few weeks. It's okay to keep money in cash and wait out some of this volatility. But remember that when markets turn, they turn fast. So it's okay also to start thinking about, all right, where do I redeploy that cash? And the idea here is that, and I know Dan, you and I are on different sides of this one. I don't think that tech leads us in the next phase of this market. I don't think that tech ends up being the big winner. Now, that doesn't mean you don't invest in tech, but I think that there's a better chance that some of those cyclical sectors like financials, like materials, and cyclical asset classes like small cap do lead us back out, or at least for a while, maybe starting in the second half. So if you're trying to figure out when do I redeploy that cash and then where do I redeploy that cash, I would start doing it soon, but I would drip in and I would do it in those sectors and in those cyclical parts.
Fair enough. All right, Liz, you pulled your Twitter following and we got on board of this one for a bunch of questions as we get into quarter end here and some of your thoughts on the broad market. You're going to hit it on your podcast, The Important Part, which is a must listen to, people. You can find that in your favorite podcast stores, along with On the Tape, OK Computer, and Market Call. Just load them all up there, right, Guy Adami? I mean, all right, listen, I'm going to read this first one, and Liz, you take a crack at it, and I know Guy's got to have plenty to say on this. This is from Mojo Stocks 67. That is from a guy named Scott Molis, I think. Should I continue to overweight in the energy sector going forward or take some profits? Can energy continue to go higher? I've gotten crushed on everything else. That's a fascinating way to kind of juxtaposition this. This 5% of the S&P 500 now is the energy sector. I think it was 3% or so. Liz, what's your take on this? If this is the one area that's worked for him. And I think you'd probably say that if we are to come out of this, energy is probably not going to be the leadership. I think you think cyclicals give it to us.
Yeah, but you know what's confusing about it is that energy usually falls into the cyclical camp. But you are correct that if we come out of this on the other side in the second half and things are better, and I also think that there's risk to the downside because there could be a de-escalation in the Russia-Ukraine war. If China reopens, I don't think that's enough to make up for a de-escalation. So I think energy prices probably have seen their peak. That doesn't mean they're going to fall off a ledge. And there's certainly wider profit margins in the energy companies. But if you're really overweight energy here, I think it's okay to be taking profits and redistributing that to other places.
Yeah, I'm with EY from SoFi. We actually talked about it last night. You know, there's sort of a new kid in town where the people talking about energy stocks back in the fall as we were. But now I think these people, you know, they're falling prey to the victim of love type of thing. If I can continue to go down this Hotel California route. And what does that mean? That, well, now everybody loves them, and I think they involve victim to exactly that. I think you take money off the table. You look at a name like Valero, which I think made an all-time high yesterday. I think it does a back and fill down to the prior all-time high 120. Another name like a Marathon Petroleum, which we've talked about ad nauseum, which made a new all-time high yesterday as well. I think that can do a back and fill from the sort of this 120 level back to their prior all-time high. I think it was the summer of 2018, around $90. So don't get married to these things. I think they can absolutely be tactical. You can trade them. I don't think the energy trade is over. I just think it's over in the short term.
Yeah, no, Guy, you laid it out really nicely on Fast Money last night. I'll just say this, with all the excitement about Exxon, you know, going from an all-time high just, I don't know, a year ago to basically 20-year lows, you know, that's where it was that last summer, then a new all-time high just this week. I just don't think you pile in on the large integrateds. I think you've got the call on a lot of these more service-oriented names. All right, here's one from at Colton Wright. That's with a W76. So the government, the guy, this is coming right at you, buddy. So the government has injected around $5 trillion in COVID relief. What happens to corporate earnings in late 2022 and 23 after that money is spent? We know you and I have been talking about this a lot. So if you, Liz, that the current year estimates for 2022 are calling for up, you know, over 10%, $228 in earnings. None of us think that is particularly likely here. Guy, your thoughts on $5 trillion in COVID relief? We're just starting to roll off that balance sheet, raise interest rates meaningfully. What's your take as far as U.S. Yeah. corporate earnings?
Well, as they say for you Hemingway fans out there, the sun also sets. And Colton is asking what we used to call a rhetorical question. I like the word because there's an H after the R and because I actually know what it means. But he absolutely knows the answer before he asks the question. And I think the answer to the question, corporate earnings are going to falter, and we're not going to see the earnings growth that I think people have come to expect. And I don't think you're going to see on the back of it the multiple that maybe $5 trillion worth of stimulus and those types of things in a Fed that was reckless for years sort of warrants. I think we're in this new paradigm where I think a 17 multiple for the S&P 500 is reasonable. And then you just have to start to figure out what the other side of that arithmetic equation is in the form of earnings. I think somewhere around 220, other people think lower, but you do the math and I think you come out with about a 3,500 or thereabouts S&P.
Liz.
Yeah, I plucked that question particularly for Guy. So yeah, you're
just trying. You know, it's funny.
I know.
Everybody likes to agitate me. You were trying to do it last night on the Twitter successfully. Now my Wi-Fi went down and this backdrop. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm this close.
It's too easy.
This freaking close.
Yeah. Well,
please continue.
All right. Look, yes, I do think earnings have to come down. And when you look at it by sector, I think they especially have to come down in consumer discretionary and in industrials. The expectation for Q3 and Q4 in both of those sectors, earnings growth is still above 30%. That just can't stay that high, especially in consumer discretionary and some of the narrative that we've already heard about inventory problems and changes in consumer behavior. So I do think earnings come down in the back half of the year. But I said this in the piece, we can slow without stopping. We can cool without freezing. It's okay for earnings expectations to come down. That doesn't mean that we're definitively going into a recession. But this is what happens when you cool demand in an economy. And that's what we needed to happen to fight inflation. So yes, I think earnings come down. I'm going to say somewhere between 5% and 10%, hopefully closer to the 5% side, which would put you slightly under that 220 mark. But I still think that, you know, we'll hear more revisions in the next 30 to 60 days, and we should hear more revisions.
Yeah, I think we're probably below 215. That's my take here. I think we probably end up in, you know, low to mid-single digits EPS growth, and that would be optimistic. That's my take. I'm no economist. All right, one last question here. This is from @ThunderFlex. This is Steve. It's basically talking about a recession. Do you think we still aren't headed for one? I guess you're on the record, Liz, for saying that we aren't headed for one. And do you think second half of the year will turn green, or will the bear persist through all of 2022? Where do you think the NASDAQ and the S&P bottoms are? I'll just hit that really quickly. I do think we probably see a recession in 2022. I think the S&P will start to anticipate that, probably bottoms out down 30%. That's my take. And that is the average decline that you see in the S&P 500 when we do have a recession. I think the NASDAQ probably bottoms out 40%. And just to be clear, at the lows last month, the S&P was down 20%. The NASDAQ was down about 30%. So I do think that there's going to be a period of downward volatility that sees us there over the next, I don't know, 3 to 6 months or so. Liz, your take.
This is what makes our job so exciting, because there's so many people out there on one side of the equation and then a bunch of everybody else on the other side. I don't think we're going to see a recession in 2022. I am not so sure about 2023. So I think that we slow down in 2022 and we manage to have some green in the second half and we calm down, but then we get this sort of false sense of security that we've avoided all disaster. Earlier in the show, Guy said, I don't know what the market wants or needs right now. I think what the market wants and needs is for inflation to come down faster than growth is coming down. And I don't know that that's going to happen. But I'm not sure that we're going to feel like that's the biggest problem until later in the year. So I think we avert recession technically this year, meaning I don't think we string together two quarters and maybe head into a technical one in 2023.
All right, fair enough. Hey, Guy, let's just kind of weave this in because we got a couple more topics. We only have a couple more minutes here. So the jobless claims this morning, you and I have been talking about it a little bit. We see the headlines every day. We know some very big corporations are slowing down. Their hiring expectations might even start doing layoffs. That's going to put pressure, downward pressure on wages. We're also seeing a lot of private tech companies doing layoffs. I think that continues to persist. And then obviously tomorrow, you already mentioned it, we have that CPI report coming out. So again, you know, one of the bullish sort of things about the wage situation was that higher wages and a better jobs environment was going to be, you know, help offset some of these inflationary pressures. So, you know, again, Guy, give me your take on the CPI and how do you think markets react here? And then we're going to talk about, of course, our main man, John Butters, from Earnings Insight at FactSight, and what he's seeing on S&P earnings calls about inflation.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, now you're starting to see you're seeing layoffs. Absolutely. Yeah. So hiring freezes. You're hearing this from a number of different companies now. It's across the spectrum of industries. And this is at a time where you still have negative real wage growth, which is a real frickin' problem because wages are not keeping up with inflation. So you better hope, to Liz's point, that inflation comes down precipitously. I just don't think it's going to happen. And I'm not quite certain what the number's going to be tomorrow. Again, I don't know what the market is looking for. I think they do want to see a pretty precipitous drop. But what does that all mean? I mean, maybe it means slower economic growth, which is not particularly bullish for the market either. You know, again, I think we find ourselves in a scenario where we used to be, regardless of news, it was bullish. Now I think we're starting to flip that switch to regardless of news, the market might interpret things as bearish. We're going to see how it plays out tomorrow. And by the way, if you call yourself Thunderflex on Twitter, you better be a badass, because if you're not, man, you are playing way above the rim. Back to you, Dan.
Well, don't you think at Liz Young Strat is pretty badass as a Twitter
handle? She can back it up. When have I ever said that's not? By the way, congrats to your mom who recently retired. Only an elegant woman, but a beautiful woman.
Yes. Both of those things. Huge congrats to mom.
Yeah, that was a really nice tweet, Liz. All right, here's the last thing here. And I definitely want to get Liz's take on this. So you guys know that we get a preview of John Butter's Earnings Insight blog that drops every Friday on the FactSet website. You can find it there. You can subscribe to it and get it in your inbox. But, you know, again, John's been tracking inflation and what S&P companies have been saying about it. And my takeaway here is you can just look at the bullets there. You can see the areas in which you're seeing it. It makes perfect sense. We're seeing it in industrials. We're seeing it in consumer discretion. 100% of the materials companies have mentioned it. But this is the most important takeaway for me. And Liz, I'd love to get your take on this. And this is really ties into the S&P earnings conversation we just had. The estimated net profit margin of the S&P 500 for Q2 has declined, not much, to 12.4% today from 12.7% at the end of the first quarter. This is the thing that I really want to track here, because the net profit margin for the S&P 500 for the calendar year is unchanged since March 31st at 12.6%. If we are going to see a lot of companies have to make really hard decisions about passing through these costs of higher inflations, right, or eating it in their margin, this is going to be the story of Q3 guidance, in my opinion.
Yep. And I think it's a process that we've already seen starting. So obviously profit margins are under pressure. I just don't think we've heard all of the data yet. So they still look really high. The good news for companies is that they are historically high. So there's a big buffer in there. But then there's a process of how they cut costs, right? First to go is that maybe they freeze hiring and they stop spending so much on advertising. We've already heard rumblings of both of those things. So then you should see that bake through into the economic data. What we don't want to see, and this is why I don't think we see a recession this year, because it would be highly unusual in the sense that it's never happened before to have a recession with a jobs market that's this tight. But if they go beyond freezing hiring and start to lay people off across all of the sectors, that's where we have a problem. I'm hopeful that we don't have to get to that point, because there's a big enough buffer, not only in profit margins, but in the open positions, where we can kind of get rid of the excess first without going completely over the edge.
Family's got a lot of buffer, Senator. That's for extra credit for you people playing market call bingo. Of course, as EY knows, that's from Godfather 2. That's Willie Cheech while he's testifying in front of Congress when he tries to understand what the word buffer actually means. That's neither here nor there, by the way, in case anybody cares, Dan. You want to sort of take us out? You want me to take care of this entire thing?
Listen, guy, I feel like we tweaked you here today. Twerked you, tweaked you. You got all fired up. I know you were excited to have Liz. She's down in Austin. She was tweeting some funny stuff.
Frying
here.
Eggs.
But I think you came out of this thing, the other side, okay right now.
Yeah, listen, absolutely. I feel good about things. It's what's today? Thursday. We have a hockey game tonight. The Brewers are in first place. I mean, everything seems to be coming up roses, as they say. Yankees playing at a 41-16 clip, which is almost historic. Although, you know, with a venerable franchise like the Yankees, 41-16, I don't even put them in the top five all time of their records at this point, as opposed to a team like the Mets who just suck. Anyway, this was Market Call, Dan and EY. I am Swizz. That's EY. That is Dan Nathan. For more great content from Liz Young, and it, by the way, it is great, follow her on Twitter. You all are, I know, but tell your friends, as they say, tell your friends, at Liz Young Strat on the Twitter, and sign up for SoFi's daily newsletter at SoFi.com/daily and read Liz's articles every Thursday. We won't see you tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday. I am hoping that tomorrow at this time I will be enjoying a 3-2 Ranger lead in the best of seven series headed back to Tampa. The winner playing the Colorado Avalanche in Colorado next week. Dan, Dan's rolling his eyes. You want to say something before we go?
Now, Liz, thanks for being a part of this, guy. Thanks for coming out of the other side of it in such a great mood here. We will see you guys on Monday.
Later.
Later.